Blog Talk Radio.
And we're going 60 minutes tonight. 60 minutes. I've been warned if I go over 60 minutes, I will be here by myself. So
a power-packed 60 minutes. Don't miss a second.
We're going hard. 60 minutes because at 6:59 and counting, we're out. So welcome to the show, my co-host and my sister, Ronnie.
Happy April.
Happy April, Ronnie. How you doing?
You have beautiful flowers?
No. I've got rain and no flowers. I have no flowers.
Not yet?
No, not yet. You have beautiful flowers?
They're coming up.
Oh,
all around. Everywhere you go, people are planting their flowers and the trees are budding. We have something that kind of looks like those cherry blossoms in D.C., not quite as vibrant as that, but nice, like pink, they're baby flowers, but they're on the trees around, and then some with white, and then some yellow that look like the old, back in the old days, we had that honeysuckle thing. So
yeah,
it's coming up.
Yeah.
And tulips, it's looking like Easter, very pretty.
Oh, yes, and did you get your palms yesterday in church?
No.
Yeah, they didn't give you palms? Oh.
They didn't have a palm. Did you get a palm?
Yes, I took a bunch.
Oh, good.
So you can have some if you want some. When you
okay.
Come over,
they were selling them at the grocery store.
The dried palms that you can't do anything with, they sell them at the grocery store?
Mm-hmm. They make, like, a design out of it, and you can buy it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
pretty.
Everybody gets them free at church, don't they?
Yeah, I believe so. We didn't have any, though.
Yeah, they usually, because remember when we were kids, they would always give you a palm
mm-hmm.
or shape of a cross or whatever.
Right.
They had so
it's many, always pretty.
They had so many palms today. They had, like big, you know those things, the bins, the trash bins, like the big green trash bins that are on the side of the road?
Oh, yeah.
Had bins that size of palms
wow.
in church. So people, and they were handing them to you at the door, but a lot of people just went, because they would hand each person a few, but most people, like yours truly, went just straight over to the trash bin and just took, you know, basically take whatever you want. It's the last service. What are you going to do with all these palms? Give me some.
Are you going to make a thing?
I forgot how to make it. I made one last year, but it, you know, it took me so long, I decided this year I wasn't going to do it.
Oh. You just put them in your vase or something, decorate.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I didn't get that many. I just got a few. I didn't get that many. Sean.
Hi. What's going on?
Sean is here, Auntie.
Hello.
How's it going?
Oh, wonderful. Happy spring day. I think it's sprinkling out a bit. A little cold, but...
rain outside and
yeah,
all
I know. It's a little sprinkly and a little chilly.
Yeah.
It's very chilly. It's, like, cold.
I wanted to say cold, but I thought I'd be more positive, Sean.
It's cold. Hey, St. John's
chilly. Chilly has a little warmth in it. It's just straight up cold.
It is. It's cold. St. John's won today, the tennis team.
Oh, good. Fantastic.
Hey, wait, let's get it.
Yeah.
What was the score, Sean?
The score was 6-1.
Hey! And who'd you play? And who'd you play?
I think you're a little bit too happy with that.
Was it outdoors?
Yeah, it was outdoors. We actually got the match right before the rain started, so was pretty good. They won 6-1 against Seton Hall. It was a big match because we'll win this. We get to go off to the Big East Championship. We have one more Big East team to beat, and then we get to go down to Florida for the championship and hopefully compete there.
That's fantastic.
Go St. John's, hey. I think that's great, though. That's great, right?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. The team keeps getting better every match, so it's good. It's good momentum going into the end of the season.
Okay.
We have, I think, three more matches and then the Big East Championship, so hopefully we'll be able to take care of business for the next three.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Because
I like Florida. I haven't been to Florida. That sounds like a big, you know, a nice thing to get down there and play in the nice warm weather and stuff. It's got to be fun.
Yeah, hopefully spring in
Florida.
Wish you
the best.
Spring in New York apparently means outside right now.
A lot of rain. But no, that's really good. So, and you are basically coaching the team.
Yeah. The head coach actually had to resign. So I've been working with the men's coach. But the men he has his team, and his team is ranked 58 in the nation.
Which is good.
Which is pretty good. So he's off actually in... He played Yale and Harvard this weekend, so I was at home and I got to do the Seton Hall match. And, you know, I run some practices and do my best to make sure that they're as prepared as they need to be going into these matches that we have.
That's really cool. Congratulations, hey!
Yay! Yeah.
Woo!
Awesome!
That is awesome. That is
awesome. That's fantastico.
Yeah, man. That's really cool. So, listen, Ronnie, we're talking,
yes.
I know we have exactly 60 minutes. You have warned me. I have been forewarned that after 60 minutes, I will be here alone.
Exactly. Yes.
I scheduled the show.
We've got
right
a power pack. A power pack.
Yes, it's power packed. And we got a lot to talk about, too. So you want to start with Trayvon, or should we end with Trayvon?
Let's start with Trayvon, and then we can move on to, a brighter conversation. Because, you know, you always want to end on a bright note if we can. Is that Trayvon, hopefully maybe some people will call in and add what they might want to add. And hopefully, you know, I want to start out by saying that I do believe after listening to all of the commentary this week and the protests and different psychologists and lawyers and judges and all weighing in on Trayvon's situation, the family situation, not Trayvon's situation, the family situation, that I believe there is going to be justice for Trayvon. I do. I believe there's going to be justice for Trayvon. The mere fact that the president weighed in, you know, all the pastors weighed in, our pastor weighed in on it, you know, had something to say about it. And usually they don't speak about things that happen, you know, outside in the worldly issues, but they don't. But they did. So your pastor spoke about it. I believe that there's going to be justice for Trayvon. And this week I've watched as much as I could possibly watch regarding what was happening with him. And I tell you, he was, you know, I just feel like he was just gunned down by this person. And I believe the reason why he is not, the person is not, was not detained, was because his father was a judge.
Yes.
I really do believe that. And his father was a judge and a former judge in Florida. And I believe that they somehow finagled him out of jail. The way they did it is so unclear. It makes no sense. You know, it doesn't.
He was in jail. I didn't know he was ever in jail.
That is really the biggest controversy in this whole situation. People think that the police officers just walked up to him, said, "Oh wow, you shot the guy. Oh wow, he tried to kill you. Oh well, see ya. Sorry that he tried to kill you. Self defense. Talk to you later." Absolutely not. He was handcuffed. He was put in custody. He was taken into the booking area. And somewhere in the booking area, he was released after they say a prosecutor called and said that there was not enough evidence to hold him. Makes no sense. It makes no sense. Because nobody, I don't care who you are, if you go to jail, if you're locked up, you're in handcuffs, you have a charge, because he was charged with homicide. So,
really?
Oh, yeah. He was charged with homicide. And so once he was charged with homicide, the next step in the judicial system is that you call an attorney or you call your mom, you call your father, you call whoever, and you make bail. Or if you can't do that, then you have to wait for a judge to arraign you. And I believe in this, in the judicial system in the United States, you should have had to be arraigned when there is a homicide involved. When you commit a homicide, you should have to be arraigned. I don't think you should just pay a bail, you know, a monetary amount and just walk out.
Right.
And like the other attorney said, if in fact he was able to get out of jail just because he said the confrontation was life threatening to him, how many people would walk out of jail?
Everybody would.
There wouldn't be a person left.
It was a stand your ground. And, you know, they said something interesting on Open Line today. A legal expert said that the person who was actually entitled to the stand your ground defense was Trayvon Martin. He was the one who was being attacked, and so he was the one who would have been in the right to shoot George Zimmerman, if anybody could be in the right to shoot someone. And so they're saying that he was not entitled to that defense whatsoever, but the man still remains free. So this is the biggest... Yeah, for now. But still, I'm like, I just don't get it. I don't get it. With all the noise...
Your father's a judge. If you go back to the case of the Natalie Holloway case in Aruba... Johan, what was his name?
That's right.
His father was a judge.
Yeah. Yeah, especially in a small place like that.
Right. In a small place like that. So his father was a judge, and retired judge. The same thing with this gentleman's father, and he has never been charged with the death of Natalie Holloway. They've never found a body, whatever. But he's in jail. So that's the good thing, because he committed another crime. We're hoping that this doesn't happen here, where this other gentleman has to commit another crime to be, I hope he doesn't end up having to commit another crime before justice is served. But I do believe that he is going to go to jail, because the reason why I believe that's going to happen is because there are too many prominent attorneys, judges, the president, too many people have their eyes on this case, and they're not going to be able to get away with just letting this man go free and killing this child in cold blood. They brought the FBI in now, and the FBI is supposedly analyzing the 911 call to determine whether that was Trayvon screaming on the 911 call. Uh-huh. So they have so many ways to prove this case. The mere fact that you could hear him screaming, and I don't understand why the man says he's the one screaming when you have a gun. What are you screaming for?
I don't know.
And then you plan to shoot this kid. You pursue the child, and then the girlfriend that he was speaking to, the father comes on TV in a mafia stance, and I call a mafia stance where you go in the dark, you're all blacked out, nobody can see your face, he didn't disguise his voice, but he has, he's behind the dark curtain, and he's saying that Trayvon threatened the man by saying, you're either going to die now or you're going to die tonight, and then commenced the wailing on this man and then pounded this man's head on the concrete. And so when the man became...
The judge said that?
Yeah, the father, the judge.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Right. So then when the man felt like he was going to be killed by his head being pounded on the concrete and the fact that Trayvon punched him in the nose and broke his nose, then he reached into his belt and pulled out his pistol and shot the child. So now myself and all the other lawyers, doctors, judges, Cheryl Lee Ralph, you could go on for hours of all the people that have weighed in on this. Well, okay, if that was the case, then we can understand that you might feel threatened. You might feel that your life is threatened if your head is being pounded on the concrete. So we want to see evidence of your face. There's got to be some bruises. There's got to be some damage. There's got to be, if your head was bleeding, you say that the police report says that your shirt was covered with blood, then let's just see it, and then we will all say we rushed to judgment. We still don't believe that you needed to shoot this child because you shouldn't have been pursuing him in the first place, but let's see it. So then they unleashed the videotape of him coming out of the police car, of the squad car, into the booking area in handcuffs. That's why I know he was arrested. And he had not one spot of blood. He had not even a scratch on his nose. His nose wasn't even swollen. His head didn't have one spot of blood. There was no cuts. There was no evidence that that child laid his hands on that man. So then they went to the funeral director who prepared his body, asked him, did Trayvon have any offensive wounds? Did he have his knuckles bruised? Did you see any evidence of Trayvon having been in a fight? And he said, no, there were no wounds on his hands at all.
They didn't do an autopsy on Trayvon?
They did an autopsy on Trayvon.
They did, right?
And you know they had his body held. They didn't contact his parents for 3 days.
Which was so crazy.
Yeah, but okay, so now the funeral director said there was no... I would believe that if you were pounding somebody's head on the concrete, you would have gotten at least a scratch. If there was a fight to that magnitude, you would have gotten some kind of scratch. There would have been some evidence on your hands. And so
all right. So they're saying that they said that Trayvon turned on this guy. How did he turn on him? Like where? What? The guy followed him, and then Trayvon turned on him. It doesn't. It's not adding up to me.
It's not adding up, and that's why the problem, because this is how it starts out. He's in supposedly his vehicle. He's driving around. He's called 911, and he says, this guy looks suspicious. He's walking through the neighborhood. He has on a hoodie. He's this and that. Then he makes this comment, these effing always get away.
Right.
The 911 says, do not pursue him. We don't need you to do that. Are you in your car? If you're not, get back in your car. So now he, of course, does not get back in his car. And Trayvon now is walking and telling his girlfriend, this guy is following me.
Right.
You know? And so she's saying, look, you need to run. And he said, no,
right.
I'm not going to run. I don't know. Why should I, you know, I'm not doing nothing. Why should I be running? So now this is where it gets blurry. Because I don't understand, if Trayvon is walking and they have the 911 tape where you can hear this guy panting, rushing up on him.
Oh, gosh, I see.
Okay, so now if he rushes up on somebody, I don't believe that I wouldn't have punched him in his nose, too.
Right.
I believe if you rushed up on me, I'm going to bust you right in the head with something if you come rushing up on me. I don't know who you are. You didn't say you were an officer. You didn't say anything. Just out of the blue, now you're rushing up on me. I got to protect myself. I'm not just going to stand there. It would be different if you said something like, hi, why are you in this neighborhood? What are you doing here? He could have said, oh, I'm going to visit my dad. My father lives here, or I'm going to my dad's house. I'm going home. Something. So there's a deep, dark hole right there.
Right.
They have an eyewitness that they didn't interview for 9 days.
Right.
And he said, he said that they were fighting. They were fighting. He said, but they were not on the ground, and that man's head was not being slammed into the concrete. So it's getting to be a mess. But I do believe that there's going to be justice for him.
I pray there is. I really do. I pray there is. So here's the other question that I had, and I don't know if this is if this makes a difference or it doesn't make a difference or if it's politically correct or not, but I'm just asking the question, okay? I don't want any letters. I'm just asking the question. I'm just asking the question. That's all. I'm just inquiring. I want to know. All right, so my question is this. If this guy, first of all, do we know, does Zimmerman live in the community, in the gated community? Because when I looked at his picture, I said that I would have been afraid of him. He looked very scary in that mugshot. So
he looked scary in the mugshot.
Yeah, so I'm wondering.
But I believe he lived in the community. Now, his neighbor piped up and said, he was justified in his actions because... And I don't know how you could stand there and say this, but anyway, he said he justified his actions because they'd had 8 break-ins and all committed by black men.
What?
He said that right on TV. Well, you know, Nancy cut his mic by the time it was all over.
Oh, gosh. Oh, Nancy Grace? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. So they're trying to say they've had 8 break-ins all committed by black men, so every black person in the area has got to be followed, right? So this is what they're saying. So the next question is this. If that's the case, then the father, somebody, okay, my point is this. Why, if his father lived in the community, then they should have known that somebody black is coming to visit the father. So don't shoot them down because there's a resident here. But the father did not live in the community. The fiance lived in the community. So what is it that, who is the fiance?
Oh, it was the father's fiance?
Right. It was not the father. Oh, right. So, you know, so we're going to say, okay, did Trayvon, these people have never seen Trayvon before, that he's never walked through that community before, where he has to be that afraid to go into the gated community to go to his dad's house. So it's not his dad's house, we find out. It's the fiance's house. So I'm wondering now, if there are no black people in that community, so they feel like they should stop each and every one of them, or if you can't visit somebody in that community if you're black without fear of being stopped by Zimmerman because they had some robberies by black people, if that's even true. I mean, that's crazy in itself anyway, but if that's even true, so are they saying basically black people, you can't come in here? Well,
that's what it sounds like to
it,
me.
So,
I got another question. Because I've been in many gated communities. You can't go in there unless you know somebody. You
exactly.
get to the gate and they say, who are you coming to see?
Exactly.
I'm going to see so-and-so. And if you're in a really elite gated community, they call so-and-so and say, are you expecting so-and-so?
That's right.
Are you expecting Trayvon? He's at the gate. Shall I
That's
send
right.
him up? And they say,
That's
okay,
right.
yeah, send him up. Or they say, I'm going to bring him over.
Right.
I'm
if
bringing Trayvon over. Or are they going to say, are you coming down? It depends on how, you know, vast the community is. Are you coming down to pick the person up? He's not driving. Or he's driving in. Do you recognize this vehicle whose license plate is so, you know.
Right. That's right.
There's ways to get in gated communities. So, was it a gated community?
You don't just walk in. Right? You don't just walk in.
You don't just walk in? You don't just walk in.
Somebody's on the line who wants to speak with us. Let's see who this is. Caller from 1217. How are you? Welcome to Ask Kathleen. Tell us your name and where
hi,
you're calling from.
Hi, good afternoon,
from.
Kathleen. And hi, Ronnie. I think it's Ronnie.
Hello.
How are you? I'm good. I wanted to ask you all, have you heard the 911 call that one lady called and she could actually hear Trayvon screaming?
Yeah, that's what we were saying, that they're analyzing that. The FBI has...
So where is this lady? That's my thing.
Oh, she's in Florida. She's in Florida.
And
but
no one has pulled her up as far as questioning?
Well, this is where the controversy and the disgrace and the outrage and the outcry has come from, because they feel that this case has been botched and it's not being handled correctly.
Right.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, because of the mere fact that if your father's a judge or was a judge, and judges have power, they were hoping maybe that it would just go away.
Right.
They didn't expect it, this big outcry from the entire world. This is not just the United States people weighing in on this. People all over the world are weighing in on this. I've seen some of the most remarkable white man who was a journalist came on and he made a plea to white people to come out in support of this family, because we need to stop this type of profiling and racism in this country.
Right.
We'll see if that happens. But, I mean, enough is enough with this. Enough is enough with this. You know, I was saying about the young man that was actually, the girl called, I don't know if you heard this 911 call, but there was another 911 call where the young lady said, my brother saw this.
Oh, wow.
Saw
no,
them.
I didn't
Did you hear,
I didn't
that,
hear
one?
That one.
Yeah.
No.
She said, my brother saw it. And she said, your brother saw it? And she said, yes. And they didn't let you hear the entire tape, but that particular one of the other mothers, she actually came on the show that her son actually saw the incident, and they didn't talk to him for 9 days.
Mm.
When it blew up like it did, that's when they decided, well, we got to. But I don't blame the police officers because they did their job. They arrested him and charged him with homicide.
But they let him go.
And then the upper, they said a prosecutor from some office called and said there was no evidence at this time to hold him, but they were going to continue to investigate.
How about a dead child in the morgue?
I don't know why that's not enough evidence.
They got a gun, they got a body.
They got a gun, they got a body. But see, that's why I say that the law is colored with a very wide brush with many colors because it depends on who commits what crime. Because, like I said, Nico, I don't know if you heard me earlier when I said that they showed the videotape of this man getting out of the police car in handcuffs. They wanted people to say that they had been arrested. And there wasn't a spot of blood on him. There was no evidence of him. It had been 30 minutes since he was in that, you know, in 30 minutes since he shot that child before we saw this.
Yeah, even the cop was looking at his head, and they didn't do anything. It wasn't, you know, he wasn't alarmed.
And then they brought a doctor on. Right, and they brought a doctor on that had the gall to say, oh, all broken noses don't swell or bleed. Kobe Bryant had a broken nose, and he continued to play.
Oh, please.
Let me tell you something.
Yep.
Broken noses bleed like paper cuts.
Yeah, I know. I've had one.
That's right. And
it was bruised and broken.
Bruised and broken. And we all remember those pictures of Rihanna.
And you have to go to the hospital to get a broken nose fixed.
And we're waiting for the hospital report, the doctor's report. And then they told me, you know, I take this all personally, sorry. And then they reported that the EMTs cleaned him up on the scene.
And didn't take him. They didn't take him. He went to the police station. But when
Right, and the other prosecutor said, listen, I have been to the hospital to see injured suspects. They're in the hospital being treated in handcuffs.
That's right.
I've seen people in the hospital in handcuffs, cuffed to the bed.
I used to take care of them. I know. They handcuff them to the bed.
They post the officer outside of the door.
Outside
or two, depending
room.
On how
That's
dangerous
right.
they are.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not want to ever go in those rooms, but I had to. I had to. I was like, well, wait a minute. He's got one free hand. But anyway. Well, listen,
okay.
I want to read something from Tyler Perry.
Go.
So I don't know if you guys get, and this is kind of long, but I'm going to read it at the risk of Ronnie hanging up on me at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm going to read it to you. I'm not sure, but
is it a 15-minute piece?
I don't know how long it is, but no, it's not that long.
It's not 15
minutes,
Ronnie.
Go.
All right. Hey guys. From Tyler Perry. At tylerperry.com, you can find this. Hey, guys, a few days before President Obama was supposed to speak at my studio, I was leaving the studio headed to the airport. Most times when I leave the studio, I have an unmarked escort. Other times, I constantly check in my rearview mirror to be sure that I'm not being followed. It's a safety precaution that my security team taught me. As I got to an intersection, I made a left turn from the right lane and was pulled over by two police officers. I pulled the car over and put it in park. Oh man, let me see who this is. This might be Jerome calling me on the restricted line. I'm not sure. Hello. Oh, hi. No, I'm doing my radio program. I'll call you back as soon as. Okay. All right. Okay. Bye. Sorry about that. That was not Jerome. Okay. So I signaled. As I got to the intersection, I made a left turn from the right lane and was pulled over by two police officers. I pulled the car over and put it in park. Then I let the window down and sat in the car waiting for the officer. The officer came up to the driver's door and said that I made an illegal turn. I said I signaled to get into the turning lane, then made the turn because I have to be sure I'm not being followed. He said, "Why do you think someone would be following you?" Before I could answer, I heard a hard banging coming from the passenger window. I had never been in this position before, so I asked the officer who was at my window what was going on and why is someone banging on the window like that. He said, "Let your window down, let your window down. Your windows are tinted." As I let down the passenger window, there was another officer standing on the passenger side of the car. He said, "What is wrong with you?" The other officer said to him, "He thinks he's being followed." Then the second officer said, "Why do you think someone's following you? What is wrong with you?" Before I could answer, the officer on the passenger side, the one on the driver's side, had reached into the car and started pulling on the switch that turns the car off, turns the car on and off, saying, "Put your foot on the brake, put your foot on the brake." I was so confused as to what he was doing or what he thought he was doing. It looked like he was trying to pull the switch out of the dashboard. I finally realized that he thought that switch was the key, so I told him that it wasn't the key that he was grabbing. Obviously, this is an elite car that the officer has no idea how to operate. I reached down into the cup holder to get the key, not realizing that the key had a black leather strap on it. As I grabbed it, they both tensed up, and I dropped it as I heard my mother's voice from when I was a little boy. My mother would always say to me, "If you get stopped by the police, especially if they are white policemen, you say yes, sir, and no, sir, and if they want to take you in, you go with them. Don't resist. You hear me? Don't make any quick moves. Don't run. You just go." My mother was born in 1945 into a segregated hotbed town known as rural Louisiana. She had known of many colored men at the time who were lynched and never heard from again. Since I was her only son for 10 years, growing up, she was so worried about me. It wasn't until after I heard her voice that I realized that both of these officers were white. The officer on the driver's side continued to badger me. "Why do you think someone is following you?" I then said, "I think you guys need to just write the ticket and do whatever you need to do." It was so hostile. I was so confused. It was happening so fast that I could easily see how this situation could get out of hand very quickly. I didn't feel safe at all. But one officer stopped his questioning and said, "We may not let you go. You think you're being followed? What's wrong with you?" At this point, I told him that I wanted to get out of the car. I wanted the passersby to see what was happening. As I stepped out of the car, another officer pulled up in front of my car. This officer was a black guy. He took one look at me and had that "oh no" look on his face. He immediately took both officers to the back of my car and spoke to them in a hushed tone. After that, one of the officers stayed near his car while one came back very apologetic. I said all that to say this: do you see how quickly this could have turned out for the worse? Now I know there are many great officers, patrolmen, and security guys out there. I'm aware of that. But although we have made significant strides with racial profiling in this country, the world needs to know that we are still being racially profiled. And until this situation has improved greatly, I'm not sure how a murder in Florida can be protected by a stand-your-ground law. And in another case that I've been screaming at the top of my lungs about, also in Florida, is the case of Terrence Williams and Felipe Santos, a young black man and a young Mexican man. 8 years ago in Naples, Florida, they were both put in the back of Deputy Steve Calkins' police car and never heard from again. They were never arrested, never brought to jail. They were put in the back of the deputy's car and never heard from again. And to this day, Deputy Steve Calkins is a free man. Guess it's time to march in Naples now. Racial profiling should be a hate crime investigated by the FBI. That way, local government can't make the decision on whether or not these people get punished. Tyler.
Wow. Awesome. I'm glad that it didn't turn out in a bad way.
Can you imagine?
I can't imagine. You couldn't even. I'd be inconsolable. But listen, I just moved out here from over in Okie, Muskogee, where on the freeway there's cows on both sides. And I don't mean like a cow or two. I'm talking about hundreds and thousands of cows. So you know how rural this is.
Right.
I used to get stopped. I got stopped like maybe five times.
Oh, my goodness.
Five or six times? Just because of whatever. You know, and they'd stop me. And every time they'd stop me, I would say, good afternoon, officer, and look at his badge and say, what's your name? Because that's how you kind of just, you know, diffuse some of the hostility. Because, you know, all black people are either stealing something, robbing something, or doing drugs or something. You just kind of diffuse it by saying, what's your name, officer? Oh, officer so-and-so, good afternoon, how are you? And then I would get on my phone and call whoever was home.
Right.
And tell them, listen, I'm being stopped by officer so-and-so on such and such a street.
Wow.
Da 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 da. He said such and such, this, that, the other, and the other. And he just goes and writes his ticket and lets you go.
Wow.
I learned that, you know, living in Los Angeles. A, don't get stopped in a dark spot. I don't care what they say. I don't care if they lock you up.
Yeah.
Even if they lock you up, you go to a spot that's well lit.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. Yep.
And where people are that can see, you know, if you have to go to a convenience store, parking lot or something, gas station, something, just don't pull over on the side of the road just because they arbitrarily stop you. Because you never know what they have in their hearts. And they're not always evil, but it's unfortunate. But so back to this situation with the, you know, African-American males. You know that they are targeted just in general. And like I said earlier this, was it in Christmas? Or Christmas, I guess it's been like right after Christmas or right in that area, I forget. A gangster opened fire on a police officer in Brooklyn and shot.
Uh-huh.
I know, you remember that?
Yes, I do.
You guys, Nicole, you remember?
No, I don't know that.
It's about two. Okay, so now it happened. He was an officer that was from Nassau County, and he was called to an incident, a robbery in Brooklyn, and the guys were still in the house. So I guess they were trying to get out of the house, and when the guy came out of the house and saw the officer on the street, he opened fire and shot this man right in the face and killed him dead right on the street.
Right.
One of the, you know, the officer that everybody loved. And I just knew, I said, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be, you know, I mean, yeah, you know what I mean. I don't want to say it. I'm not going to say what I think, but you know what I felt in my heart. I'm not going to say something terrible. But it just felt like, oh, thanks a lot. That's what we need right now. You know, are you there?
I know, you're absolutely right.
Yes.
That's what we need right now from you. We appreciate it. That was, you know, we're trying to get ahead, and that one incident can fuel so much because people think, oh, well, that happened in New York. It doesn't matter. Are you kidding me? Officers all over the country, you know how they are. They stick together, and they all over the country, they're furious about something like that.
I know.
Because the police officers that here in New York were livid.
Oh, yeah, I know. One of my friends is a detective, and he was talking to me about that. Yeah, they were crushed. And they often do refer to that as saying that this is why the officers can't be patient with people, you know, that you can't just – they have to act quickly. In other words, not justifying the killing of Sean Bell, because that happened to be what we were talking about at the time, but not justifying that, but definitely saying, you know, people are expecting the officers to second-guess things or shoot people in the foot or shoot people in the knee or whatever it is, and they don't realize that when you're in that situation, you're staring down your life, right? So they just, you know, and they're trained to shoot to kill. That's what they're trained to do, and that's the way it is.
And everybody that gets involved in a situation with them has to know that they're trained to shoot to kill. It's like, I'm not trained to shoot the foot.
Right. Right. But this guy, what's his name? That was the other thing that I was wondering about. I was like, what was he trained to do? You know, what
he wasn't. That's the reason why this incident is absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't trained to do anything. He was disappointed himself as the neighborhood watch. And I think something came up maybe a week or so ago that he said that his ex-wife was going to come up and say something in regards to domestic violence.
Uh-oh.
I'm not sure what anyone heard that. I think I heard that on E! News Entertainment Tonight or something like that. Yeah. Or either in Inside Edition. It was one or the other.
I didn't hear that.
That Jim Zimmerman's ex-wife was supposed to come up because he's been in trouble before, because it was said that his ex-wife was a victim of domestic violence against him.
Oh, okay. I had heard he'd had several issues in the past, infractions of some kind, but they didn't say what they were, or at least I didn't know what they were.
Okay, I wanted to bring up, because we only have a few more minutes left.
I know.
Run over five, I won't hang up if you run over 5 minutes. I've got five to spare. But I wanted to say this, that they brought up the fact that Trayvon was off, had been suspended from school because they found marijuana in his backpack or some sort. I don't even believe that. But even if he was, I still don't care if he was suspended from school. I don't care I don't care. None of that matters, because every teenager has some issue or another. I'm telling you, I had issues as a teenager, and that my parents didn't expect me to get shot because
right.
I did something in school. I got a C in algebra or any of that. None of that matters. It wasn't a school issue. This was not on the school grounds. This was in the evening. He was going to see his father, and he should have been able to arrive there safely. He wasn't doing anything under the sun to make this man feel that this child was suspicious at all. And I personally think that if, like Dr. Drew said, listen, I don't blame Trayvon for punching him in the nose, because I would have done the same thing. If he did punch him in the nose, I would have done the same thing, because anybody would have done the same thing. This guy walks up on you and he has a gun. Are you kidding me? You're going to punch him right in his nose. You're going to do whatever you can to get away from him. And to this, and I still don't know if he was punched in the nose. When Nico called, I was about to say, Nico, did you see the picture of him getting out of the police car?
Yes, I saw the picture and the video.
Now, Kathleen, I was saying that we saw the video. They said, oh, it's not a clear picture. It was clear as a bell.
It was clear, very clear. The video was clear, too.
It was clear as a bell. What did you want for me to be able to do? Be there on the scene? It was clear.
Yeah.
You know, and Casey Anthony walked away because there was no eyewitness to her killing her child, which to me is the most insane thing. Most people don't kill people on camera,
right.
But whatever.
Right.
Now this, we have pictures. We have evidence. We have a dead child. We have the body not buried
and
in the swamp for 6 months.
They have the weapon, too, don't they?
They have
or
the weapon.
They
have everything.
I want to take a quick break because we have a news clip and we are joined by our political strategist, Jerome Esprit. So let's take a quick break because, you know, Ronnie is going to leave me at 8 o'clock.
Yes.
Let's get
I
are.
Nice talking to you, Ronnie.
Oh, you too, Nico. Talk to you next week.
Hold tight, everybody. Hold tight. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Esprit News, 90-second news break. The price of oil has fallen as a number of key nations consider releasing reserves to increase supplies. French ministers say they were discussing with the UK and US plans to tap oil reserves. Figures show a larger than expected increase in US oil inventories also helped push down the price. Pope Benedict XVI has ended a visit to Cuba by criticizing the US 53-year-old trade embargo. The Pope claimed the blockade introduced after Cuba's communist revolution in 59 and strengthened 3 years later was an unfair burden to the Cuban people. He said Cubans should forge a society of wide horizons, renewed and reconciled. A top Canadian court legalized pimping and brothels in an attempt to make prostitution less dangerous. The landmark decision by the Ontario Court of Appeals ruled that the previous ban on brothels put prostitutes at risk and was unconstitutional. As of April 25th, prostitutes will be allowed to hire bodyguards and other security staff. The case is likely to be appealed. An Alaskan Airlines flight that was scheduled to travel between Long Beach and Vancouver was forced to land in Portland when children aged 3 and 8 refused to stay in their seats. I see a beatdown. There you have it. I'm Jerome Esprit for EspritNet News on Ask Kathleen.
Welcome back, Kathleen. I was screening a call real quickly. Ronnie, you were mentioning something on Trayvon Martin. You were just closing on that, so I just wanted to give you a chance to finish up your thought.
I'm really done with it. I just know that there's going to be justice for Trayvon, and I'm standing on that. And before you go to Jerome, I just wanted to know, did anybody see that pilot that had that meltdown on JetBlue this week?
Oh, wow, yeah. I don't know. Jerome, are you there? Do you have us on mute, or are you available to speak to us about the pilot?
Hello, everyone. How are you?
Jerome is really good. How are you?
Good.
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 Did you know anything about the JetBlue pilot? I know
you
do.
I would have put it in that news break. There was three airline incidences. There were the one where the two kids wouldn't fasten their seatbelt. There was the flight attendant who freaked out, and then there was the pilot. Yeah. So the pilot, I don't know what excuses that they're making for him, but the second in command, or whoever the co-pilot was, locked him out of the cockpit when he started talking crazy inside of the cockpit.
Right, right.
So then some
passengers took him down or something.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but it was real. It was smart of the co-pilot. I have to say, the brave person in this was the co-pilot. He got him out of that cockpit because he would have been locked in there, and everyone would have been in the back not knowing what's going on.
I love a co-pilot that will put you out of the. It's like, oh, go to the restroom.
Exactly, and change the lock and the combination of the
cold
door.
Water.
Right, exactly. Well, listen, we only have a few minutes left, and we didn't talk about being skinny. And we have a caller on the line who mentioned, who wanted to know what we were talking about at the time. I'm not sure which topic he wanted to talk about, but. Ronnie, did you want to jump into that real quickly?
About being skinny?
Yeah.
It's time
getting
for the summer. It's summertime. It's time to be skinny.
And that's all? That's all you have to say?
I have extra. I'm not skinny.
Right. Well, about weight loss, and especially, you know, Easter is coming up, or Resurrection Day is coming up, rather, and, you know, that's a typical day that people go out and eat, another holiday that, you know,
I know.
Dinner, very popular, so people are thinking about that. At the same time, springtime is here, so folks are thinking about getting thin and being, you know, shedding some clothes.
Yeah, getting fit, really.
Yeah, losing weight, getting thin, all of that, of course, is going to be really important to a lot of people right now who said they wanted to do it as of January 1st but still had not done it yet.
Well, I give them a pass.
Yeah.
I'll give them a pass. You know why? Because in the beginning of the year, January 1st, you've just had the Christmas holidays and people still might have some leftovers going on from New Year's dinner or whatever, and as soon as we get done with that here comes Valentine's Day.
Chocolate.
And a bunch of candy. You know?
Yeah.
And before we can say, okay, I really didn't eat that much candy, and I've got a couple of little workouts going on, but it's freezing over here.
Yes, it's
this
cold.
This is a different climate. It, you know, it's difficult for me to go and get to the gym and sweat and everything and come out in 10-degree weather or 12 or whatever. This year wasn't so extreme, but say 25, 30-degree weather for me, it's a change for me. It's really difficult. So I say...
From a place, a city that they have summer for 2 days in August.
Exactly. You have 16 days of summer if you're lucky. But I think the dietary aspect of staying thin is the most important thing to embrace. It really,
yeah.
really is. It's the change of diet, the change of mentality, you know, the mindset. You have to put your mind on, I'm going to eat this, I'm going to eat that, and just stick with it for life. That's the
bottom
line.
And you know what else? What I found out as well is I eat a lot more now than I was eating when I was complaining about my weight. And Jerome, I know you have a very different thought about this with regards to, you know, how you think about your weight and how you think about your health and so forth. But one thing I did notice now that I'm really diligently paying attention to this, I'm believing that I, you know, my weight is going to change easily, that I'm eating a lot more, and eating more, I am dropping pounds. So, you know, being conscious of the fact that, you know, to rev up my metabolism, eating every 2 to 3 hours, and really for me now it's every 2 hours, making sure I'm eating something, whether it's an apple, an orange, or something, making sure that there's something on board so that when I get to the meal time, I'm not starving and just trying to ravage up every possible thing I can. The one thing that I do want to change, though, is eating late at night, and that's something that has become a habit, and I'm looking at changing that.
Do we eat late at night?
I do. I eat late, but that's because I stay up too late also.
But I was wondering, like, did we grow up eating late at night? Was that a...
I did. Remember, I used to cry for the Ovaltine and the cookies and the whatever else it was that they used to give me at night. I used to have milk and heavy stuff late at night when I was a very heavy young lady. Baby.
You were not that heavy. But, okay, I remember that. But then it's the culture.
It was heavy at the time. You're right.
The
I wasn't that heavy.
Is, right. The culture
yeah.
is that they have a supper. Which is, you know, people eat dinner and then they have like a bedtime, you have a bedtime tea or you have a bedtime, like, you know, hot milk or something like that to give the kids and a cookie
right.
or something like that. But I'm thinking that we must have stayed up too late and ate, because remember we used to eat that popcorn?
Yes, remember. I do remember. There was a lot of stuff that we used to eat very, very late at night. But,
very late
you know,
at night.
Very late at night. We used to eat very late at night. But we only have 2 minutes left, Ronnie, so we're going to have to continue this conversation and really go into the psychology of weight. And, Jerome, I really want you to talk about, you know, what you mentioned before, because I know you have a lot of evidence of people just thinking differently about their own weight and how when changing it, changing the thoughts about weight, they're able to start to change their weight. But since we only have a couple minutes left, I was going to let Jerome take it and then Jerome, we have 1 minute left. So you guys.
Well, give him 3 minutes.
No. You guys do what you do. I'm sitting here enjoying myself, so I'm cool.
Okay. All right. So, Ronnie.
Go ahead.
Ronnie, we have like 30 seconds. So welcome to Ask Kathleen. This is Ronnie checking out. See you next week on Easter Sunday. We might be here. We might play a rewind. But anyway, go ahead, Ronnie.
Good night. I'm going to eat tonight, and then I'm not going to eat for the entire week. I'm going to have fruits and vegetables, and by Easter, I'm going to have 3 cuts.
Okay, great. And I thank the caller from, oh, he just hung up, the caller from 973 area code. I apologize that we couldn't get you in. But thank you, everybody, for listening to Ask Kathleen on Sunday evening, 7 p.m. We'll be back next week, or you'll be able to listen to a rewind. So have a fabulous week, and we'll talk to you then. Happy spring, everybody.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.